I think we move to the next discussant, Dr. Bill Habram from Columbus, Ohio, please.
Yeah, and I think I'll just make my comments from here. I don't have slides, but I wanted to just make a series of points in regard to Vaptans and heart failure. First of all, as already mentioned, vasopressin levels are elevated in most patients with heart failure, and they're inappropriately elevated in hyponatremic heart failure patients. So given our experience previously with other neurohormonal inhibitors and antagonists in heart failure, ACE inhibitors, ARBs, aldosterone antagonists, and beta blockers, the initial enthusiasm for Vaptans as a treatment for heart failure was relatively high. You've heard about some of the studies, and there have been additional studies of Vaptans done over the years that were not presented. But the bottom line is when one looks at the totality of the data, what we know about Vaptans is that they're very useful agents for correcting hyponatremia in both heart failure patients as well as patients with SIDH or other causes of hyponatremia. And in fact, in the U.S., two agents, Conivaptan and Tolvaptan, are FDA approved for the correction of hyponatremia without clear demonstration of improvement in clinical outcomes. There's a third agent that you heard about, Lixivaptan, which is currently under consideration by the FDA for approval, again, with an indication of correction of hyponatremia. So are Vaptans useful in some patients or for some indications? Certainly, if the target of treatment is correction of hyponatremia, these agents are very effective at correcting hyponatremia and appear to be safe across disease populations, including SIDH patients and heart failure patients. So now we come to the broader question in heart failure, and that is, are these agents useful for the treatment of heart failure per se, regardless of sodium level? And to date, the totality of the evidence suggests that they are not, despite a good and understandable potential mechanism of benefit in heart failure. There has to date been no evidence to suggest that they improve mortality like the other neurohormonal inhibitors and antagonists that I mentioned earlier. To date, there is no convincing data that they improve morbidity, that is, reduce hospitalizations or have a sustained effect on improving patient symptoms, although perhaps that hypothesis has yet to be adequately tested. And certainly there is still some attractiveness to these agents as adjuncts to diuretic therapy for fluid removal. So, you know, I would say that the jury is in on the treatment of hyponatremia. These are effective agents and should be seen as a valuable part of our armamentarium for treating hyponatremia. The jury is still out, although I think the jury is, trending towards an indictment here of vasopressin antagonists as additional studies continue to demonstrate a lack of clinical benefit for the treatment of heart failure per se.
Thank you. Let's do a poll, starting from the left of the table. Would you use a tolvaptan or any of these agents for patients with hyponatremia and congestive heart failure? Yes or no?
Without making a pithy comment, I'm a clinical trial methodologist and a regulator, and I don't treat patients. Okay. So my answer would have to be no, I wouldn't treat a patient.
Let's move to the next one.
I would say yes, without being provocative. I think the data are very interesting, and though patients, I mean, at least those in the clinical field know that patients with hyponatremia and heart failure are really the patient at the end stage where really they're scared and we don't know what to do, and we often put them on the transplant list, at least when they are really, we feel, at the last stage. But yeah, I would use Vaptan with no problem.
Mihai?
So in a secondary paper that they improve signs and symptoms for a couple of days, but the important hypothesis needs to be tested. It's blocking both V1 and V2. blocking V2, it's doubling, I said, the vasopressin level of any deleterious. So now new agents, V1 and V2 blockers, will be probably tested, and that will show indeed that you cannot block V2 and ignoring the V1.
Bill?
Yeah, so I would, for the treatment of severe or symptomatic hyponatremia in heart failure patients, I would use these agents. I think they're preferable to anything else we have to offer in the treatment of hyponatremia, such as dimethylcycline or severe fluid restriction, which is difficult for our patients to adhere to. I think the major limitation to the use of these agents is that conivaptan is intravenous, tolvaptan is oral, but both require initiation in the hospital, so they're priced as hospital medications at hundreds of dollars per day, which for all practical purposes makes them unrealistic to use chronically or in outpatients.
Yeah. Mike?
Yeah, I agree with what Bill said. With the addition to say that I think symptoms of hyponatremia can often be quite subtle and maybe not apparent in retrospect, so we have a lot of heart failure patients with, you know, sodiums in the high 120s who, you know, their mental acuity, we often say, oh, it's just because they're old or they have heart failure, but it's not always totally obvious when someone has symptomatic hyponatremia.
So I refrain to vote because we don't have it in Italy. So, Alice?
I get to refrain as a government employee, and my current clinical practice is limited to scheduled outpatients.
John?
I would really like to see drugs of this class be licensed for some form of use in heart failure. I think that there may be a short-term role. I was a bit worried about the lixivaptan data because it did suggest that there was a higher event rate even with short-term use of lixivaptan, but of course we have the safety data from Everest, which is a far larger body of data. So I think that to help me in a difficult situation when I'm running out of therapeutic options, looks like we've got a lot of safety data, corrects the hyponatremia, and it's one of those drugs you think that should be licensed for people who've got to carry a special permit to use special drugs. I have to say, I do think there is now a competitor in the field to the management of this problem, and that's hypertonic saline. And I think there's a number of studies coming through with hypertonic saline, even in Italy, especially in Italy, where it started, I think. And you know, these patients have hyponatremia and fluid overload. They may have salt overload, but we can often deal with the salt overload with a good slug of diuretics. But and you know, I think that you can often restore some diuretic responsiveness, limit the adverse impact on renal function by giving them thrice normal saline and diuresing them properly. So maybe we have an alternative.
Bob?
Yeah, I would use these drugs for the labeled indication of severe hyponatremia of any etiology.
Dr. Pitt?
I think it's all been said, and I agree with Bob. Hyponatremia, fine. The rest, I think the trials maybe will be interesting, but they're short and small, and we'd really need outcome trials before I'd be convinced that I would change my mind.
Dr. Fiasat, please.
Yes, I agree with what Bill said and Mike and Bert. I think hyponatremia, for sure, it's indicated, and we'll have to wait to see what the data shows for a more compelling argument for heart failure alone.
Let's listen to the nephrologist.
Yes, I certainly wouldn't use Vaptan so far because of the lack of long-term outcome study. However, from a pathophysiological point of view, it is undoubtedly interesting, especially in potentially interesting, at least in patients who are resistant to diuretics and with also which is usually simultaneous with severe hyponatremia. It's obviously interesting.
Okay, it seems there is an agreement then. General agreement. Any question from the audience to this distinguished panel of experts? Any further comments from the panel?
I suppose it's good to go back and think, you know, what are the fundamentals that are causing the hyponatremia. It does look as though AVP is a major player, but perhaps not the only player. Maybe we need to try and look at the stimuli that switch AVP on. We did try one of the very early drugs that was a kappa agonist, which is meant to switch off AVP. But we had some near misses because it looks as though it was probably quite an arrhythmogenic molecule, the one that we were using. Yeah, we need something to tackle the AVP, whether we need non-selective antagonists that cover the receptors, whether even then we'll get rebound, etc., it's not clear. Whether we need more aggressive aldosterone antagonists along with the AVP antagonists, Bert, do you think you can block your concerns about the...
It's one of the things we're thinking about, and Mike and I have sort of proposed that, but it has to be studied, and we don't know. The safety would have to be looked at very carefully, and so it's certainly not ready for clinical use.
Presumably, I can't remember, Everest must have looked at the subgroup on aldosterone antagonists and seen whether or not there was a difference. Mihai's still there? No. Okay, well, that's this evening's dinner conversation.
So is any study on this V1A receptor activation in relation to aldosterone being planned? Is there any study in vitro or in vivo on the potential effect of activation of the V1A receptor in terms of aldosterone increase?
So I understand that there is some data from Everest on the aldosterone levels, which I haven't seen, but Dr. Georgiotti and I are putting together a study to look at this.
Thank you. So.